Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 87. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, community organizer and author, Cecile Andrews. After the conversation in this episode, I'll report on some new services we're offering. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. Cecile and I talked exactly 3 years ago on Simple Living Works podcast, episode number 15. In that episode, we talked primarily about her books. A link to that episode is given in the show notes. Living Room Revolution, a handbook for conversation, community, and the common good, offers her usual insightful, innovative thinking on growing, sharing, happiness, and transition movements. It's a fitting complement for Cecile's previous works, including Less is More, Embracing Simplicity for a Healthy Planet, A Caring Economy, and Lasting Happiness. Slow is Beautiful, New Visions of Community, Leisure, and Joie de Vie. The Circle of Simplicity, Return to the Good Life. And as a contributor to Take Back Your Time, Fighting Overwork and Time Poverty in America. A former community college administrator, Cecile received her doctorate in education from Stanford University. She is active in the Sharing Movement, the Seattle Area Happiness Initiative, and the Transition Town Movement, all efforts to build community and sustainability where they count the most, at the local level. She lives in Seattle, pursuing her passion for leading small groups and help change society. She says, from things like shareable.net and meetups, we're seeing a transformation in how our society gets things to change. The old ways don't work anymore. They're costing us too much, not just in dollars, but in our future, our children's future, and the survivability of the planet. What needs to happen? It all starts with local, she says, and local starts with small groups, meeting in people's houses, living rooms, cafes, meeting rooms, and auditoriums. That's why she wrote Living Room Revolution. I see, speak to, and talk with lots of groups who really want to have an impact, want to seek change, but they don't necessarily know how to take their energy, vision, and commitment to the next level. Living Room Revolution is all about helping them move forward. It's meant to be a step-by-step guide for creating and leading the most powerful forces our society have ever known, the small group of committed people. Cecile is available for consultation via Skype, FaceTime, Facebook, and online forums, as well as in person. She's also reachable by email at cecile@cecileandrews.com. In this episode, we talk about her community organizing to protect our country from aggressive politicians and her work with millennials and minimalists, which is a newer word for simple livers, such as strengthening of a new world that's possible, rather than just surviving. My colleague Lee Van Ham's new book, scheduled for release this month, says much about community and resistance to repressive governments and corporations. Entitled From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable, it is volume 2 of Lee's trilogy called Eden for the 21st Century. I've read an advance copy, reviewed it, and highly recommend it. Lee and I talked about volume 1, Blinded by Progress, and Volume 2 on this podcast. The links to those episodes are given in the show notes. Our colleague organization, Jubilee One Earth Economics, also resists the destructive forces of our society. Here's Cecile, previously recorded. Well, Cecile, it's been 3 years exactly since we talked last about your new book, The Living Room Revolution. Now, I'm going to encourage my listeners to listen to that interview, but in case they aren't able to get to it right away, why don't you remind us about the basic theme of your books, you know, the whole idea of the simplicity circle as it was originally intended, and then we'll talk about what it's evolved to recently.
Well, the whole idea is that the way change comes about is by people coming together and talking. And that's been true all through history, starting with France, up through the women's consciousness raising groups. And I was, many years ago, in the mid-60s, I went to a place called Highlander. And that's where Rosa Parks was trained. She credited with preparing her for her historic action. And their whole theme at Highlander was bring people together to talk, and they will find the answer. We don't just give people the facts. In fact, Berkeley's George Lakoff said that, you know, liberals tend to think if we give people the facts, then people will change. But no, you have to evoke empathy. And one of the ways you do that is getting people to talk to each other. So all my books have had that theme. Come together and talk, and you get inspired, you get ideas, you get just excited about life, and it impels you to go out and make changes in your life. Plus, you always feel that you have somebody you can come to who will support, listen, and give you respect. So that's the theme that I followed. It's funny, once somebody said to me, oh, Cecile, you must be, they saw me starting another small group. You must have been a sheepdog in a former life, they said. And I remember thinking, well, yes, indeed, that is true. How nice to realize my true nature, that my purpose is to herd people together, talk. So that's the theme to all of them.
Now, most of your simplicity circles have been in your own neighborhood.
That's another good aspect of it, that you need to start local, particularly these days, that we're going to make a difference by getting to know our neighbors and feeling we belong someplace. Now, what happened with the book Circle of Simplicity, I basically gave people the idea about how you do it. And it's easy for people to do. You don't have to be specially trained. You don't have to be an expert on anything. But basically, you know how to bring people together and ask them about their stories and get them listening to each other. And these circles are not places where people argue and try to convince other people. They're there to help each other come to a conclusion, help each other to have a new idea, and support each other in taking action. So they're different than most of the discussions that we have in school, where you're trying to be right or you're trying to come out on top of the conversation. These are places where you're talking together, you're thinking together, you're enjoying each other together, and that's always crucial in any group for social change.
Well, now, Cecile, that's the ideal, but you and I both know that things have become so contentious in our country, so politically divided, that it's hard to imagine people that just don't want to reach consensus or do not want to collaborate, who do not want to compromise, being a part of these circles. What has been your experience?
Well, of course, I live in Seattle, so we're all pretty much of one mindset. But the thing that's nice about simplicity is that you don't necessarily have to be talking about politics or ideas. You might be talking about, how can I consume less? How can I slow down? How can I have more time to myself? And these are topics that do bring people together, that you don't feel you have to convince somebody else about how they should slow down, that you have to convince somebody else to enjoy themselves more. And so what you do is that you share your story. And as you share your story, other people tend to say, oh, well, that happened to me, or I felt that way too. So simplicity is a really good way to bring people together of different political backgrounds. And they don't even have to talk about politics. They can talk about, you know, the best way to keep from having a lot of garbage, the best way to plant a garden. And those things, I think, can bring people together in a way that's not contentious and it is collaborative. So I think there's hope there in these.
Well, that's very encouraging, Cecile. What I have found that so much of what's happening right now is so much contrary to the five life standards of living more with less that I've based my ministry on, that there comes a point to where we have to resist. Is there some way of resisting the current trends without getting into politics?
Well, again, I think this resistance comes when you come together with people and share your story. We're doing a lot of that right now in Seattle. And even though you'd think, well, we tend to think alike in Seattle, we really have different ideas about how to do things. But somehow, many of us were on the Women's March, and what we saw were people wanting to do things together, wanting to be happy, wanting to be keep up their spirit. And I think that this is what we're trying to do, that we're committed, in fact, to not singling people out and attacking them. We're committed to finding some way that we can find something to share. And it's interesting because the whole thing with simplicity has always been, people think, and in fact, the comment that I heard the most over the years was, what's that thing you're involved in, that self-deprivation movement? And people thought, oh, if you're going to live simply, you're denying yourself. You're not going to have anything that's happy. But what it's just the opposite, that we want people to live more fully, and that we're here to help people figure out how to be happier. And that it seems to me there's one idea, and this is the difficult thing, that motivates so much of Americans. And that's the idea that if you're rich, you'll be happy. And because we believe that, we go to wars, we hurt other people, we destroy the environment. And so how to do something about that? Well, when all of us first started talking about simplicity and talking about being rich wouldn't make you happy, most people didn't believe us. They thought, all right, you know, human nature, that's what we're like. But now we have the research that shows that being rich does not make you happy. And in fact, it can do the opposite. But what does make you happy? Connection with other people, a sense of calling, a sense that you're making a difference, a sense that you're in control of your life, a sense that you have a chance to clarify your life. And all of this, again, suggests coming together with other people and talking in a supportive, caring manner. I saw an article a few days ago by, again, Berkeley's George Lakoff, and he said, what we want now is a politics of care, that we want, we're not just out for rights, we're for care. He says there are two elements in that, respect and listening. Once again, we come back to coming back together to talk with each other. So things look very scary right now, but people are so motivated to get involved and resist that, you know, I think that we can feel excited that people are so committed to getting involved.
A lot of us think of in terms of voluntary simplicity as a matter of personal happiness. But you and I both know that's only half the picture. The other half is that we must work for social justice. We must be advocates. So there isn't just a matter of enough for me, but there's enough for everybody.
Exactly. And in fact, when we get involved in that, we find that that does bring us the most happiness, is working for the common good. And so it's, again, all the research shows when you are working with people that you care about for something that's going to make a difference, going to make a difference to the world, to the planet, to other people, that really is where your true happiness is. And I know that you and I have both experienced that of working for these things. And again, we're lucky that now we have some research. It's interesting, the wealth inequality research shows that the bigger the gap in a country, the more some negative things happen. The more depression there is, the more crime there is, the more unhappiness, the more drugs. But what's not known is that when there's a big gap between the rich and the poor, which of course America is one of the largest ones, what happens is even the rich person is not as happy. They have found that the rich person in one of these countries has a shorter longevity. They don't live as long as a person in a place like Denmark or Sweden where there's less wealth inequality. And why is that? It's because when you have great wealth inequality, you've torn the social fabric. People don't feel that they belong together. They feel other people are out to get them. You know, the rich suspect the poor of being trying to trick them, and the poor suspect the rich of trying to, well, which might be true, trick them. But if you have wealth, so you can work towards more wealth equality, and you will be, one, making yourself happier in the short run, but you'll be making a country happier in the long run. That social justice is highly related to happiness. But it's not just doing it for yourself. It's doing it for the common good. And that really is what brings it, true happiness.
Well, now, Cecile, you and I are both what you might call old school simple livers. But there's a real rising trend I see in a movement very closely related called minimalism.
Mm-hmm.
I just see so many people attracted to the minimalists,
mm-hmm.
These two fellows that have just put out a new documentary. They have so many readers on the internet. There's a wonderful, Joshua Becker has a Becoming Minimalist, a blog and books which have just millions of followers. Now, you have begun to meet with also millennials, you know, the younger generation, young adults. What similarities or what differences are you finding between the old school simple livers and the new school minimalists?
Well, this has been so exciting that it was interesting. A bunch of minimalists in Seattle decided to put on some simplicity groups and discovered, as I read my book, that I was living not far from where they were living themselves, and so got in touch with me, and I've been working with them ever since. And it has been tremendously exciting because they really are looking for something new, as we were when we were their age. And so they're discovering all this, but I think that the biggest thing that they're having to work at is that we need a new kind of conception of the work life. We need a new conception of our living quarters. And so they are living in smaller quarters and enjoying it more. But then what they're also doing is reaching out to each other and realizing that they have to work with each other, that that's the chief sort of satisfaction. But I think that the big challenge is we're not going to have the kinds of jobs we've had in the past. And we know that people in America work too much, work too long, and it takes them away from relationships, from making a difference. And so this exploration that the millennials are doing, it's very exciting. And so I think that we can feel very cheered to know that they're working on this. And it's interesting because, you know, in most cultures, traditional cultures, elders are seen as having wisdom. Well, I don't think anybody sees us that way in this culture. So you don't go and say, you know, well, we learned a lot. But what you do go is saying, I want to talk with you about this. You've got some great ideas. This sounds wonderful. So what we do is that we set up situations once again where we come together to talk. And so now that I do a morning simplicity group in Seattle, it's got all range of ages, and it just makes it so exciting to do things like this. So I think we can feel cheered and hopeful.
I understand that this new kind of economy is being called the gig economy.
Yeah.
Because so many young adults don't have the traditional jobs where, you know, it's 9 to 5 and they have benefits.
Right.
That they have to just go from job to job to job.
Yeah. And so they're having to be more thoughtful. And again, they're having to turn to each other to help each other out so that they'll have somebody to depend on, you know, living together, sharing cars, sharing things. So the whole sharing economy, which we haven't even touched on, I think is getting larger and larger. And it's such an exciting idea because it not only saves on resources, but once again, it brings people together. You know, in America, we have this, we're going to do it ourselves. You know, we're going to take care of ourselves. But we need to have this feeling we're all in this together and that we can help each other out. And that's going to make such a big difference. It's so much more satisfying to spend an evening with each other, with people talking, than it is going to the shopping mall. But that's what a lot of us were trained to do. And the young people are starting to see differently that they need to spend time hanging out with each other. So we could learn from that.
Well, there are some, you know, some small examples of the sharing economy, like a tool library where you can check out a rake or check out a trowel. And of course, there are babysitting cooperatives where, you know, young parents can take turns babysitting or providing daycare. But we're talking about something even bigger than that. We're talking about livelihoods.
We're also talking about time banks. And I think most people have had some experience with time banks. We're talking about co-housing. We're talking about people just sharing. Like I've heard lately of people sharing possession of a dog, that they know their lifestyles. They can't take care of a dog, so they find someone else to have the dog with them. And that's just a great idea. And so, but the time bank idea, the time dollars, that what's so kind of exciting about it is, once again, it says equality is best, that everybody's time is worth the same thing. And so when you exchange services in a time bank, my time is worth the same as one other person's time as well. So it kind of changes the way you think of things, that you begin to see, again, we're all in this together. We can't just, it's not every man for himself. And that's going to be the most profound change, I think.
A lot of this has, if you'll pardon the expression, too much of a smiley face for the circumstances that we have right now. And so are you seeing some honest-to-goodness resistance growing up out of this movement where people are talking more than the examples we've given so far? They're talking about honest-to-goodness resistance to the reversals that our society is facing right now.
Well, the resistance, I mean, what's fresh in my face right now is, of course, a week ago, I was on the Women's March, and that was so, so wonderful and exciting, and people were so happy to be together, to be marching for something. And then, of course, the week started, and we had, you know, particularly the ban on Muslims, which is what you can call it, all the really fighting all the things that exist for the common good, like education, public parks. But it's incredible the way people are turning out. Incredible the way people, for their first time, for many of them in their lives, they're out there and they're marching for things, they're demonstrating, but they're also talking to each other. They're also talking to their congresspeople, that people know that what we have to do is every day do something to resist. Every day, make a phone call to your congressperson or call a relative in another part of the country, or stop and talk to somebody on the street, support a newspaper. And I think if people begin to think in terms that that meaning comes from this, that the ultimate man's search for meaning comes from doing things like this, that this will continue to build. And it's really the only way we can look at it. Otherwise, every morning we're very depressed. I do a lot of small groups, and because I feel that I want people to talk about what they're worried about, but I want people to talk to each other about what they're doing as well. So we get inspired, we get ideas for ourselves, and when we take even small actions, we're making a difference, but we're also helping ourselves. So I think it's very scary, but the only way to approach it is to say, okay, you know, this is it. We're going to work hard, and we're going to do it in a caring way, and we're going to do it in a way that we see the importance of coming together and the satisfaction of coming together. And I think that's the only way we can approach what's going on right now.
Well, I'd like to give you a personal example, Cecile. In our family, we have 6 adults and 2 grandchildren. And so what we do, we just started doing this since the election, is that we have a monthly family meeting. But since we're in 3 different places, Iowa, California, and Northern California, we do it primarily by Skype or by FaceTime or by Hangout. And so we take minutes. So we're taking this seriously. We rotate the chair, so the different person leads the meeting each month, and different person takes minutes, and then the minutes are sent out. And basically, we're asking ourselves, you know, what can we do to support each other? What can we do to make sure that all of our family members are financially secure, socially secure, spiritually secure in this time of upheaval? So I thank you, because some of this, of course, was inspired by you and by your books and by your concepts.
Well, that's incredible. I love to hear about that. I'll use this as an example as I talk to people, because I think anybody hearing a story like that it just warms your heart. It's just like instinctively we know that this is the thing to do, and to hear what somebody else doing it encourages you to do it and makes you go out and do something like that. So thank you for that example and that story. I'll use it a lot now.
Well, we've gotten some of our best inspiration from our kids. I mean, the first thing our son did was went out and bought an electric car because he said, I know the gas prices are going to go through the ceiling. I want to keep as much of that gas in the ground as possible. And so they went out and bought a used electric car, and they love it.
Oh, that's so great. Isn't that great? And just, again, telling the story, other people will hear this and they'll think, oh, what a good idea. And it'll inspire them to take action as well.
Now, Cecile, you have quite a long list of articles and presentations that you have made. Can you tell us, I know that you're available on the internet for personal consultations or group consultations. What other plans does Cecile have in the works for the near future?
Well, right now we're working on something here in Seattle called Communities Rising. And it's people coming together and doing what we've talked about today, you and I, but they're doing it in their neighborhoods. That we have, first of all, we have the overall large group, which is all Seattle. And it's about how to help people become activists, how to help, what, you know, we're saying, what can we do to help you be an activist? And then we're having people meet in their neighborhoods so that they have neighborhood events going on. And for instance, one of my favorite examples comes from a woman named Fran Peavy, who used to travel to India, and she would sit on a bench with a sign that said, American willing to listen. So we're going to try something like that in our neighborhood. We're going to find a place to sit out in front of a supermarket, sit there with a sign, and talk to people about, you know, what it is that they want to have happen and what it is that they can do. And it's interesting. The Quakers, the American Friends Service Committee, once did this in the South. They called it the Listening Project, which I think still exists. But the beauty of it was is they went around and they asked people questions about their ideas about racism. And people started talking to them. And as the questioners listened, they didn't say anything. They just listened. And what happened is that the people who, in this time, there were a lot of racists, particularly in the South, and they started changing their minds as they heard themselves talk. They didn't have to dig themselves in deeper because nobody was arguing with them. So the pure listening to other people, whether you have a real conversation or not, can make a difference. And so we want to start some of these things up in our neighborhoods that we'll have a public park and we'll sit there. We'll have a sign that says American willing to listen. And people come by and we talk to them about things. And we, again, help spark people going out and making a difference. So that's what I'm paying attention to most. And even though I always have to remind myself to go onto Facebook, I think we can use Facebook to get some of these ideas out there. And because I'm worried that people aren't going to read long books anymore. So you got to give them something short. And so that's using technology is one way to do it.
Well, thank you, Cecile. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, but I just think, you know, when I talk to somebody like you, I just think it's so exciting that, you know, all these years you're still doing this work. And as you and I know, this is the route, this is the path to take, and that you're really making a difference and getting a lot of people excited. And it really is exciting to talk to you. So thank you for having me.
As you may know, John DeGraff was my guest the first part of February, and you and John have worked together. I know that you wrote, for example, part of the book about Take Back Your Time. You contributed to that. That's an important element, I think, with millennials, is that they realize that time is more valuable than money in most cases. If you're at least financially stable, then you don't need more money, you need more time.
It's a idea that it's kind of stayed below the surface, but I think it's going to start bursting out, as you say, with millennials, and people just getting was disgusted the way we have had our time taken up by our workplace, and realizing that we're not even in a secure place anyway, so that we've got to work for these other ideas. Definitely. Yeah, John does.
You were in education for most of your professional life, and what is astounding to me is I just read recently that now 70%, that's 70% of all the college instructors in the whole nation, private colleges as in public colleges, are adjuncts. They're not people with full-time instructorships or professors. 70% are now adjuncts. And in some cases, they have to have two or three teaching jobs, you know, just to keep things together.
Yeah, and this is, again, we've got to get some of these statistics out. It's interesting. The reason simplicity is such an exciting idea, because I can remember kind of when I discovered it, although I had always, since I was an English major and loved to read Thoreau. But all of a sudden, I thought, I don't need a lot of money. I can just buy fewer things and I can work less. So even though I was an educational administrator, it was this like sudden, like, oh, wow, you know, what a vision that if I spend less, I can work less. And so from that time on, you know, I almost never worked full time. I was still a full time. I wasn't just adjunct, but somehow finding that and realizing the linking of simplicity to kind of this freedom that you get is very exciting. And so I think that what we're coming up with is a lot of things are happening, and it looks bad to say 70% are adjuncts, but we've got to turn that around and say, how can we use this to get people thinking differently? Whenever something is starting to change like that, you can use statistics like that to get people to think, well, what does that mean and how do we need to live? And of course, the biggest thing is, what do we do about climate change? And once again, we can't just lecture and shake our fingers. We can say, you know, living in proximity with the earth brings you more happiness, and it's much, much, much more satisfying to try to save the earth than it is to consume it. So again, to transform things like that, I think is really important.
Thank you so much, Cecile. I look forward to talking to you again. Hopefully this time it won't be 3 years.
I agree. Okay, great, Jerry.
Peace be with you.
Good to talk. All right.
Bye-bye now.
All right, you too. Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to my conversation with author and community organizer Cecile Andrews. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com or our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click in window number 3. Lots of news to report. We've started a new service in 2017 called Simpler Living Sanity Suggestions. Amid all the changes in our country, we offer a new suggestion each week, not as a placebo, but as encouragement to do something for yourself, your family, your community that may counteract any negative stuff that may be coming or happening now. The suggestions are given in the weekly nudge. The weekly nudge and our weekly digest together make up the Simple Living Works blog. Also, linked to all the sanity suggestions are given in the show notes. I started a little campaign recently as a response to regressive policies in D.C. and many of the states called I Buy Blue, How About You? It's gotten, as you can guess, mixed response, some thoughtful and sincere, some mean-spirited. I take this response seriously and have replied in hopefully a helpful way. Some of the response and my replies are linked in this podcast show notes and in the Simple Living Works blog. To introduce I Buy Blue, I gave a true personal example. To see what ensued, please click the link in the show notes or subscribe to the Simple Living Works blog. Visit simplelivingworks.org, window number 2, click blog. When it opens, click follow in the lower right-hand corner. Enter your email address, click again, then confirm your subscription when a confirmation email arrives. If this sounds too complicated, send us an email headed subscribe blog. We'll submit your address, then you'll just need to confirm when the email arrives. I also editorialized recently that we were changing our long-standing alternate celebrations to non-conform freely celebrations, because the terms alternate and alternative have been compromised by the new buzzwords alternative facts in D.C. Larry Trover asked, do you have any ideas for banishing fake news without abridging freedom of speech and freedom of the press? Good question, Larry. So I've started a short series called, appropriately enough, Banishing Fake News. You can also read each little installment in the Simple Living Works blog, or read most of it on the Simple Living Works site. See the link in the show notes. I hope these little new short features add positively to the national conversation about social change and support the voluntary simplicity movement. After reading them, your comments are welcome. Please understand, this is not Facebook. An informed response is most unlikely to arise from reading only a headline. Need a nudge? I've been producing today's Simpler Living Nudge for several months and welcome you to subscribe for free. Receive it by email or Twitter. Just send me an email with the subject nudge at simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've received lots of interesting responses, which you can read on simplelivingworks.org. Click on recent comments in window number 5 or see the link in the show notes. We've simplified our blogs for this year. The weekly nudge focuses only on the efforts of Simple Living Work. The weekly digest includes the latest podcasts from colleague organizations. Both come with a free subscription to the Simple Living Works blog. The most complete, almost obsessively detailed monthly digest is now updated at least once a week and kept on the Simple Living Works site. Links to the monthly digest are given in both the weekly nudge and the weekly digest. We hope you check them out, but we don't want you to be overwhelmed by the amount of help available toward a life of voluntary simplicity, which young adults now are inclined to call minimalism. As usual, I've lined up interesting thinkers and activists for this year, including Hazel Henderson, co-founder of Ethical Markets, and Nancy Perlman, producer of Echo News. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you're new to Simple Living Works and would like more basic information, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, click Backup, and choose the episodes you want, with or without show notes. Subscription to this podcast and to our weekly blogs are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everyone's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply, that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Simply live, learn to live simply, so others can live.